How have grown-ups been reminded that the sun shines because it's a massive incandescent gas? And how did the kids learn that D is for drums? Well, it's all thanks to They Might Be Giants. Over the course of their 30-year history, the Brooklyn-based rock band has received 2 Grammy Awards, been appointed musical ambassadors for International Space Year by NASA, written the theme songs for several TV shows, including Malcolm in the Middle and The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and now they're about to embark on their first international tour in over a decade. And today marks the release of Join Us, their 15th full-length studio album. I'm very pleased to welcome back to our show John Flansburgh and John Linnell, the band's founding members, and also its drummer, Marty Beller. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Let's begin with you, John and John. You've been on the show a number of times, but always as a duo, except the time that you had a live performance here. Does Marty's presence mean that you've expanded?
It means that Marty is emerging as the interesting one. The interesting talker, although we had to pretty much drag him in here today. He really resisted coming in.
It's going to be Marty Beller's They Might Be Giants.
Exactly.
In the next few years.
Yeah. Well, Marty, you replaced drum machines, didn't you, at a certain point? In the early days of They Might Be Giants?
Many drummers did. There were, I think, three great drummers before me, and then I was lucky enough to join the band in 2004.
How did you meet?
Through Danny Wyckoff, our bass player.
Through Dan Miller and Danny Wyckoff. The guitarist Dan Miller and I were in a band together, and then I became friends with the bass player Danny Wyckoff and met these fellows.
Does it mean that you had to learn to adapt or adjust to the early They Might Be Giant catalog, which did rely on drum machines?
Yeah, there's a lot of interpretation to be done, but I really enjoy that part of it, making... The real drums sound like fake drums and vice versa.
They Might Be Giants hasn't made an album for adults since The Else. That was in 2007.
Right.
4 years ago. Did you miss making music for grown-ups?
What's weird is it didn't seem like that long ago. I think time is moving at a frightening pace for us because we were doing our normal off-again, on-again adult-child sequence. And I guess we got 2 kids' records in to sandwich together in the last cycle, and that's the whole reason for the gap.
We got a Grammy for our 1-2-3s record, and there was a lot of excitement about just sort of, you know, keeping the momentum going in the kids' world. You know, the strange thing about the kids' stuff is that we don't really have to try that hard, and it's much more successful than our rock stuff. So, you know, I mean, we try hard at putting the music together, but we don't really tour behind it. We don't really – it's just turned into this second career that – sort of snowballed.
And then the kids know your music from hearing it on cartoon shows and from and those records. Mm-hmm. So you, unlike other groups, don't have to just hold on to the fans who you developed in 1963 as you get older.
We're recruiting. Yeah, yeah.
It's all about those long envelopes. Yeah. it's a weird phenomenon. People don't know we're famous. That's the thing about being on TV is it's kind of faceless.
Have you also been expanding in other ways? In this case, one of the producers is Patrick Dillett.
Well, we heard the previous segment about, you know, drinking reindeer urine.
The reindeer drink human urine.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
So when I drank the reindeer urine before we went on, that was wrong.
It's not going to work.
Made a big mistake.
We timed it so
you go into a serious spiral and your career is going to end.
Oh man,
John, you've also been working as a producer, John Flansburgh,
for
other artists like Jonathan Coulton.
Yeah, I just finished the big new Jonathan Coulton record, which is, you know, I feel like Jonathan is almost like leapfrogging us in the world of, you know, his music has got a very humor, and Marty plays on it. His music has a very humorous bent to it, and but on this new record, he actually he's sort of turning into the John Updike of alternative rock. Some of it is very, very much about adult stuff, adult problems.
Well, and you write a lot of songs about adult problems. Before we get to them, haven't you all just returned from London?
That's correct.
Talking about adult problems?
Yeah, that's where we got the reindeer urine.
Did you hear, while you were there, did anybody talk about Rupert Murdoch?
It's great to talk to cabbies. You know, like everybody, you know, your hotel concierge and the cabbie, and everybody has an opinion, and the general feeling is that the bastards are all going to get away clean, And it's in spite of that, like, it's seeming less and less likely that some of them are already under arrest and stuff. So
yeah, that doesn't mean that they'll be punished.
That's true.
It's very emotional for them, and it's also really interesting to see how much of it is about sort of class warfare. Like, when people who are defending News of the World are on television, you know, they'll get viciously attacked by somebody, and they'll be, you know, accused of being, you know, selling out to Satan or something, and they'll come back with these lines that are just, well, you're rich. And that is enough to deflect all illegal, you know, corruption.
I had to make a living.
Yeah, yeah.
The opening track of this new album is called Can't Keep Johnny Down.
Mm-hmm.
Since both of you are named John.
Yes, it's not about us. It's not about us.
It's, you know, I mean, it is. It. I guess I have to say the choice of the name Johnny was, there was a little bit of a joke there. Because it's really not, we don't write autobiographical songs ever, but it was funny to sing a song being the protagonist, you know, voicing the protagonist being named John. That just seemed like, you know, I don't know, it seemed to make it extra funny.
And it couldn't be about us because we've been kept down.
you really don't write anything that grows out of personal experience?
Well, we do that.
You do about the process. For example, a lot of the songs like Spoiler Alert and Protagonist seem to be about the writing process and storytelling.
I think we do. We draw on our experiences, but we really don't write about our personal lives because they're intensely dull. If we tried to actually write, you know, sort of diary-like songs about what happens to us, people would be running away.
And our wives would kill us.
That's true as well.
And then
there'd be something to write about.
At the risk of you know, sounding kind of pompous, I think it's a little bit more like, you know, the way a novelist might approach something. There are obviously parts of it that are autobiographical, but those are probably more the details or the things that make it feel, give it the texture of something that's real. But, you know, a lot of it is about fantasy, and a lot of it is just about trying to make something extreme.
There is this alternate tradition in rock music. Most people are writing I Love You, Honey, and all that kind of stuff, or You Left Me. But then there are people like Randy Newman, you guys, Josh Ritter, who write, even stick dialogue into things, write about troubled people. One of the songs here, Cloisonné, features a conversation between a schizophrenic man and a raindrop.
Yes, that's true.
Yes,
it does.
I think, you know, Randy Newman is a good example. I mean, the best Randy Newman songs are real lighthouses for us. But, you know, it's also somebody like Alice Cooper, you know, somebody who takes on just an impossible, or even, you know, or Morrissey from The Smiths. All these guys are nuts, you know, and it's exciting the way they write.
Please don't mention The Smiths. They always make me so depressed.
You're taking it the wrong way.
A lot of the songs tell stories, but they're often about unlikable characters. For instance, one song has you wondering when someone you don't like will finally die.
Yes. Yes.
It's
very fun to write that kind of song because, of course, you know, we never express those feelings personally, you know, even if they are buried deep down inside.
You know, John, when you brought that in, I just thought, well, this is not since Kiss Me, Son of God has there been a song with so much mean-spiritedness. You seemed like very shy about sort of following through.
There was plans kind of convinced me to finish it because there was a point where I was thinking, this is just too mean. It's too weird. And even though we've established the fact that we don't write songs about ourselves, it's actually over the top.
Well, everybody's had those kinds of thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even that song has got kind of like a Philip Roth, like, you know, there's like, it name checks the band.
That's right.
And,
yes,
you know, it has like, you know, it's like we're all, it's clearly us in some.
In this song, there's a band called They Might Be Giants that is joining in with the hatred. But, of course, it's a fictitious band called They Might Be Giants.
Different Marty.
No, Marty.
Except my daughter keeps asking to hear that song over
and
over.
Really? Really? Yeah.
Oh, Marty, John Linnell plays pretty much every instrument possible. Flansburgh has been the lead singer on most of the songs. But you've gotten to sing lead here. How did you come to be featured on Alphabet Lost and Found?
Yes, that was so much fun. I can't believe I've spent my whole life just playing the drums.
Well, isn't it difficult to play drums and sing simultaneously?
Well, in concert, we have a little gizmo that plays a backing track. It's sort of a little homage to the boy bands. And I come out front and
You get to finally see Marty.
And you know, this is how Phil Collins got started.
That's right. He's one of my idols.
You're really feeding into Marty's dreams right now. just saying the P word there.
John Linnell, on this album and others, the band plays around with instrumentation, mm-hmm. and you play saxophone, clarinet. You can be seen with an accordion now and then.
Yes.
We had Al Yankovic on the show last week, and he declared that the accordion was becoming hip again. Do you agree?
I feel like that happened about 25 years ago. I mean,
He said again.
Again. Oh, did it go away?
Yeah.
Yes. I feel like it was unhip in the 70s, and I have to explain this to my son, that the comic strip Garfield, which portrays the accordion as an ultimate out-of-it unhip instrument, that's a very, very ancient trope at this point. I don't know, we can
blame Lawrence Welk for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's people who are no longer alive are responsible for.
Yeah, I think New York has a different relationship to accordions as well. I think that you meet a lot of people, you know, of our generation who obviously were tortured by the parents with accordions. But you know, as a New Englander, I have to say, like, it just seems like a beautiful, elegant instrument.
It didn't signify as much for us because there was no ethnic tradition of accordion playing that we were rebelling against, you know.
Well, John Flansburgh, as I said, you are often the lead singer, but the two of you
sing
together.
It's pretty much 50-50.
And you've got distinct voices, but you sound very similar when you harmonize. Is that
because
you're together so long, it's almost like members of the same family who have similar voices?
Yeah, I think, you know, there is a lot of songs that we sing together where the way we're saying the R's in this sort of, they completely sync up in this very pleasant way because, you know, John was born in New York, but we grew up, went to the same schools together in outside of Boston. And there is something very specific about that accent.
We've been discussing the fact that John has a slightly deviated septum, and I have this problem with enlarged tonsils. And if we actually both had simultaneous operations, we could have an entirely new career. Yeah.
The bell-like tone.
Full-throated tenors, yeah.
You are now able to play some of your adult material at your children's shows. Songs like Particle Man and your reworking of Istanbul, not Constantinople.
That goes over with parents, too, because a lot of the parents who are coming out are like old school, they might be Giants fans who, you know, in many cases stopped going to shows, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. So.
And then you've taken some of the songs and reworked them for kids, like Why Does the Sun Shine?
Yeah. Well, that was actually written. That was a High Zaret. What's the other fellow? The big folk singer guy from folk, like the 60s who wrote that?
I forget.
But it's basically an educational song. It's off this great album called Science Songs.
Next Friday, you'll be doing a free show at the Williamsburg Waterfront with a bunch of comedians, including Eugene Merman, Patton Oswalt, and Kristen Schaal.
Oh, they're officially on the gig. It was just listed as Eugene Merman. Patton Oswalt.
That's
amazing.
What I just heard.
Yeah, great.
So, do people see you to some degree? Marty, you joined more recently, but do you think of They Might Be Giants as a comedy act?
No. But
thank you, Marty.
Thank you, Marty. Dignity. Always dignity. Yeah, you know, this Williamsburg gig is really wild for us because it's actually on the site of where, I mean, you know, we're from Williamsburg and as a band. I mean, that's really like where we started. And
you filmed at an in
yeah,
there.
Yeah,
that's correct.
We filmed the song "Put Your Hand Inside the Puppet Head." This video there, and right on the waterfront, and it's basically the site of where this big, huge free concert is. I mean, it's going to be 10,000 people. Don't bring a backpack, people, because they'll take it away from you.
Do you think there's some symbology in the fact that you're performing there so close to your 30th anniversary?
You know, we just go where we're pointed, Lenny.
Well, the Beatles barely lasted 10 years, and you're going to be 30 years soon.
Yeah, it's weird to be in a band this long. You know, I think
to hate each other.
No. I mean,
I think we've come to hate ourselves.
Yeah, we're surprisingly still as uncomfortable in our own skin as we were in the beginning, and maybe that's the key. Is we haven't evolved into confident, well-adjusted people who say, you know, I don't need you anymore.
Well, but you've never become bigger than Jesus.
Yeah, it feels like a manic episode. I mean, I don't know. You're on the air.
I have such
every
a
day.
Swelled head. It's impossible
really?
To live with myself.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's simply just a matter of ego. It's also about getting used to being a performer is a very strange thing, having to be on even when, you know, everything is failing you. I mean, it's an impossible job.
So We're going to go out with something by
you. Oh, okay.
But a reminder that you're going to be giving this free show. When is it?
We've got a free show in at the Apple Store tomorrow night. You got to get a wristband today, and then you know tickets might run out. That's like a limited thing. And then on the 29th of July, we're playing a free show at the Williamsburg Waterfront, which is ginormous.
So it's Friday the 29th at the Williamsburg Waterfront.
Is it Friday? Or is it? Yeah, Friday. Sorry. Did I say Saturday?
And then Saturday the 30th at Stone Pony.
Yeah, that's our right. Record, that's our official record release party. Because
and if listeners want to know more, they can check everything out on our show page at WNYC.org.
Absolutely.
And thank you both. Well, thank you all three.
Mr. Marty Belly.
Marty.
The king of the drums.
Marty, it's been a real pleasure having you here with these other guys.
It's an honor.